This broadcast of Therapy in a Nutshell was previously recorded.
Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you are tuning in to Therapy in a Nutshell here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Today, we're going to be talking about a very powerful subject. It is the subject of guilt, shame, and blame. In my 30 years in my private practice, I would tell you that many, many sessions in my office have been about these three powerful issues. Guilt, shame, and blame often go together, and we're going to look at them in that regard, and we're going to look at them separately a little bit as well. I also would like to give you a clear understanding of what they are and help you take a good hard look at yourself and how you might have been running your life by these three powerful emotions. And I'd like to finish by giving you some coping skills for how to do things a little differently. So let's talk a little bit about this triad. Think of it as three legs of a stool because I see them go together all the time. If you look at the idea of guilt, a summation of that would be, I made a mistake. It's a regret for the consequences of something that happened. So guilt occasionally can be about something you thought or something you wished would happen and it didn't. But often guilt is about making a mistake and then there are consequences that happen for that. Shame is about, I made a mistake, I actually did make a mistake, and I have regret over my motives for what happened. Blame is, you made a mistake or you made me make a mistake. And blame is how we try to minimize our guilt and our shame. When we feel very powerful emotions that we have harmed somebody or we have done something that has embarrassed ourselves or created a feeling of unworthiness and therefore created shame in us, sometimes it is a response. I'm not going to say it's a natural response. It is a response to blame other people in an effort to feel less bad. In other words, we want to minimize the guilt and the shame that we feel by saying somebody else made us do it or thought of it or created the situation that made us respond like that. So when we are run by guilt, shame, and blame, when it is a major coping tool for a person to handle their life, it's an attempt to change or rectify or solve an issue. Let's look at the idea that guilt, shame, and blame have to do with trying to solve your past. And anxiety has to do with an attempt to change or solve what's going to happen in the future. So anxiety is a close cousin to guilt, shame, and blame. It's just more about the future. There is a drawing that I do for people in my office, and you can get out your pen and your paper. Draw a line right down the middle of your page, and do an arrow pointing back at the bottom of that line, back toward the left side of the page. And over there at the end of your arrow, write the word past. Then go up to the top of your page, at the top of that line, and draw an arrow to the right. And at the end of that arrow, write the word future. And then on the line that's going down between those two arrows, write the word now. What happens is when we spend a lot of time looking at our guilt and our shame that existed in the past of our lives, we are down at the bottom of that line facing backwards. We're trying to make amends, or we're trying to explain, or we're trying to minimize the repercussions of things that we did in our past. And it leaves us not very available for our here and now. Now, the same thing happens if you're up at the top of the page and all you're doing is creating energy toward a future. For example, people who are obsessed with saving every bit of money they can for retirement. And I believe in providing for your future and saving for retirement, but I'm talking about people that are obsessed by it and they live in poverty in the here and now because they're so frightened of their future. So you can exist way too far in the future and ruin your now, or you can be looking back at your past and ruin your now. So what we're talking about with guilt, shame, and blame is it is an attempt to rectify what's happened in the past. And I'm going to tell you something right off the get-go here. In the 30 years I had, 30 plus years in my psychotherapy practice in Northern California, I would tell you that every single person I have ever seen, every friend, every client, everyone I've ever known has a do-over list. They have things that they wish they had done differently. Sometimes it's very small things. You know, I wish I had read that book or something like that. But most people have a pretty big do-over list of things that they're embarrassed by or they feel a lot of shame about or a lot of regret. And if they had it to do over, they would do it differently. Now, we all, most of us are wise enough to know that the things that we would do over taught us a lot of lessons, and we are who we are today because of mistakes we've made and things we've done wrong and things we would do differently. And hopefully we've learned by those things. And there are some people that do not learn by their past, and that's one reason they're having trouble now. But if your do-over list is haunting you and shaming you, then it's something to really take a good look at. We tend to try and use guilt and shame to fix what we did in the past for our do-over list and hopefully not repeat those things in the future. But I also see people that carry a huge weight of guilt and shame for how they were treated as children, how they were in really poor relationships or violent relationships. And in trying to figure out why these things happened, they often blame themselves. In fact, self-blame is a way of trying to take control. When you can make the things that you feel guilty and shameful about, when you can blame yourself, then it's a way of having control because you can say, I won't let that happen again. So sometimes blaming ourselves is a coping mechanism for control, and sometimes it's a way of minimizing the guilt and the shame we feel for things that have happened. Let's look at the idea for a moment about how guilt, shame, and blame are a part of addiction. People that are trying to get clean and sober, when somebody comes into my office and they're on a sobriety path, I can pretty much pinpoint the ones who have a chance of being successful because they are truly looking at their guilt, their shame, and their blame, and they're starting to own their process. And once we start to step into the things we have done that have harmed ourselves or harmed others, there's a huge shift that begins to happen. The shame begins to diminish, and the ownership of what happened becomes more clear. And in that ownership, there is a lightening, a lessening of the burden of the shame and the guilt. When we look at the 12 steps in addiction recovery, and those are 12 powerful steps, and I see people do some beautiful work with 12 steps. It is not the only path to recovery. I do realize that. But people that work their 12 steps hard, it is like really good therapy. And you can do that basically for free, going to AA and NA and Sexual Addicts Anonymous and all the AAs, the addiction recoveries. But when they get to a fifth step, they want to admit to God or to themselves or to another human being the exact nature of their wrongs. So a fifth step is one of the first steps where you're really trying to own how your past was. And then you're working it. And by your eighth step, you make a full, complete inventory of persons you harmed. And you begin to step into the idea of owning how you've harmed others and making amends for that. Then in a step 9, you make direct amends wherever possible, except if making amends would harm or injure the person that you need to make amends to. But you actually write them a letter, or you go to see them, or even if you just sit and do it in prayer because it isn't safe to do it with them directly. So when we come back from break, we're going to talk more about how guilt and shame and blame change our lives, hold us back, and really ruin the quality of our lives. So we'll be back in a few moments.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
Powerhouse Solar, a SunPower Elite dealer, announces their new design showroom at 4616 Caterpillar Road. Now with Powerhouse Solar's new design showroom, you can view your property and see your solar design on the spot so you can see what best works for you. Maybe it's a trellis-mounted system, pole-mounted systems, or roof mount. See all the options in Powerhouse Solar's design showroom at 4616 Caterpillar Road. For information, go to powerhousesolar.com or call 275-5600. Powerhouse Solar, a SunPower Elite dealer.
This is a pre-recorded broadcast of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and today we are talking about guilt, shame, and blame. You were just listening to the beautiful Native American flute music of Randy McGinnis, Native American Music Award winner. You can find his music on his website, randymcginnis.com, also on Spotify, YouTube, Pandora, iTunes, Amazon. All right, so we're talking about guilt, shame, and blame. In the first segment of the show, I was telling you about how when you are right here, right now, and you're not facing too far, facing looking at the back at guilt, shame, and blame in your past, or being too far forward in the future and having anxiety about will things be repeated from the past or will you do things wrong, you are doing a better job of staying right here and right now. And so one of the things I do for myself when I get off center like that is I say, what time is it? And the answer to what time is it is now. And I say, where are you? And the answer is here. So when we remind ourselves that we are right here, right now, we cannot change or fix the past. We cannot alter the future except for to be reasonably prepared. Then we can live in the right here and the right now, and we can have a little more peace in our lives. So we're talking about how guilt, shame, and blame can take you out of that space and make you regret consequences for things, for choices that you made or things that you did. Shame for the regret, for the motives we had that created those consequences, and the behaviors that we did that harmed others or harmed ourselves, or created loss for ourselves. That's one of the things I see a lot. People have a lot of guilt and shame about relationships they ruined, things they did raising their children that they wish they had done differently. People that have addictions and get clean and sober have to work on forgiving themselves for the guilt and the shame of their addiction and how it harmed themselves and harmed others. And it's so one of the most powerful things I've seen people do in their 12 steps is when they make a moral inventory of who they've harmed, and there's other people in their life that they've harmed, but they also have to really look at how they limited and harmed themselves, because the guilt and the shame of how they have changed their own lives of a trajectory or a path that they could have been on, but their addiction changed that. They have to forgive themselves for that, and that is not always easy. It can sometimes take some really heavy work. And a good place to start is those 12 steps in AA or NA or some of the other recovery programs. Okay, so let's look at how shaming and blaming is an attempt to alter our behavior, our own behavior, or someone else's behavior. It's a little bit different. I see a different pattern for men and for women, and not across the board. Occasionally there'll be somebody that doesn't actually fit this mold. But one of the differences I see is that men shame each other a lot, and they shame each other for weakness. They don't want to admit to weakness or show weakness. They tend to, have you ever heard a guy say, "We're going to bust his balls"? That's a guy term for we're going to call him on the carpet. We're going to tell him that he was screwing up. We're going to tell him he was weak. And they will shame other men in trying to alter their behavior. And it's also a bravado stance. It's saying, "Hey, I can see that you're being weak, and I would never do that." So they tease each other. Let me give you an example of how early this starts. When I was watching my 2-year-old grandson last week, in the same day, at two different times, from two significant men in my grandson's life, each one of those men called him a crybaby. And I immediately had, it wasn't just a protective grandma response, it was a psychologist response. And I said, "Don't tell him he's a crybaby. He's frustrated and he's upset. Now, you can tell him that he needs to use his words, or you can help him understand that he's frustrated and help him alter his behavior. But when you call him a crybaby, you are doing what men have done to each other for many, many generations, and that is shame each other and call each other weak." And they both looked at me with these wide eyes like, "What? You know, this is what guys do. They tease each other. They put each other down." And I said, "You know, this is how we begin to change the future of the world. We don't call 2-year-old little boys crybabies. It's not appropriate." And they heard me. I don't know if they'll call him a crybaby again, but I was just profoundly aware. It's one of the things that made me want to do this show today on guilt, shame, and blame, because I thought, there it is, starting so early. So listen to how you as a man or other men shame each other with derogatory terms like, "You're stupid," "You're such an idiot," terms of weakness, and they feel shame and guilt if they show any kind of weakness or vulnerability. The results of men shaming creates men who stuff their emotions, who, if they express their emotions, they feel weak and embarrassed. It makes them shy, embarrassed, makes them have deep resentment and anger, and it teaches them how to suppress their emotions, which creates health problems. It fuels addictions, because if they're not good at suppressing their emotions, they try to do it with alcohol. And I'll give you a very important example. I had a man who came into my office and said, "I've been drinking way too much and I don't want to." And very quickly we got to the source of why he was drinking so much. He was deeply unhappy, and he didn't want to deal with his unhappiness, and he thought his unhappiness was just going to be, and that he had to suck it up and just keep going. But he was having trouble keeping going. But he also was he's a real guy's guy, and he didn't want to say that he was unhappy, and he felt like crying, and he was moping around a lot, and he was starting to feel hopeless for his life. It was safer for him to begin to feel suicidal and start to drink excessively than to admit that he was unhappy. And that's a lot of what happens with men. They get shamed into withdrawing and pulling back. So let's look at the difference a little bit for women. And again, not across the board as a whole. So women, if you do some of the stuff that men do, fine. Men, if you're doing some of the stuff that women do with guilt and shame, don't feel ridiculous. It does cross the board a little bit. But what I see primarily with women is that women are shamed a lot by themselves. Now, women will shame each other, but we are hardest on ourselves. And what I hear most in my office is women are hardest on themselves for not being perfect. We will start to say we need to keep everything going. We need to keep 20 balls in the air. At the same time, we need to be able to take care of the kids or cook, clean, and go to work and earn money and look pretty and, you know, the whole thing. I mean, we think that's all back in the Leave It to Beaver era with June Cleaver, but there's some of that happening right here today in 2019. Women tend to shame themselves for not being perfect. Everybody tends to shame themselves for their past transgressions, for their do-over list. They want to do things differently. But in your current day, your everyday functioning, do you call yourself stupid or an idiot or I can't believe I did that or I hope nobody saw me do that. I would be so embarrassed. Those are the things that we do to try and manipulate our own behavior into a direction that we have told ourselves is the proper direction to go. So you're getting, just by listening to this already, you're probably getting a little overwhelmed because guilt and shame and blame are so powerful. They run our emotions not only on a daily basis and a lifetime basis, but sometimes on a minute-to-minute basis. So by the last section in this show, I'm going to try and give you some coping skills on how to hear yourself a little better and how to do it differently. But let's go back to talking about how shame just really swamps us. It bogs us down. It makes us afraid to keep trying. It makes us hesitant and shy and embarrassed. And that feeling of never good enough. This is what creates what I call a downward spiral of emotions. When we feel shame and guilt, we feel less than. When we feel less than, we are hesitant. We're fearful. We don't want to step in and try something new. We don't have that creative, vibrant energy that comes when you're feeling confident. We have that, oh, what if I mess up? What if they find out? What if people see me? What if I don't look good in this outfit? What if I make dinner and it's not very good? What if I burn it? Should I bring that to the potluck? No, I should just go to the store and buy something because I might not make something good enough. The self-talk that is so shame-based creates a downward spiral of emotion, and you feel less and less effective, more and more unimportant, and more ridiculous in who you are. So the embarrassment, the shyness, the hesitancy, which is all fear. I've talked to you in other podcasts about love and fear, and it creates an atmosphere of fear within yourself. Sometimes people outside don't even know you're doing this little dance in your head, but it drags you down. And that creates a downward spiral of emotion. Do this long enough and regularly enough, and you will get depressed. Do it long enough and hard enough, and you will get anxious about your future. So I know some of you are nodding your heads right now going, yeah, God, I do shame and blame all the time. It's like my middle name. In fact, when I was coming in to record this podcast, I was talking to a friend of mine. She goes, what are you doing on today? And I said, shame and blame and guilt. And she goes, oh, you could put my name on that. I said, yeah, most people feel that way. It's powerful, and it changes who we are. So let's look at the idea of what if men were allowed to show vulnerability? What if men didn't say to little boys, you're a crybaby at 2 years old, and then at 5 years old, keep crying and I'll give you something to cry about. Or, you know, you're not hurt. That didn't hurt. You're not frustrated. Suck it up. Stop it. What if men were allowed to feel their feelings? And I'm not talking about men not being men. I'm talking about just the ability in a safe way to express their feelings. Let's go back to the guy who came in from drinking too much and was really, really sad and was smart enough to come in and say something's really wrong. As he started to give himself permission to feel, permission to go there, to talk about his unhappiness, we began to create avenues of approach to fix his unhappiness, to change it. And he was brave enough to say, okay, I'm not going to have any alcohol while I hold these feelings, while I learn how to have feelings. And as I'm learning to allow myself to feel things, how do I begin to create an environment where I can become happy again? So we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about some of the presentations I see with shame and blame and guilt and how they can really change and alter lives. And in the last section of the show, I want to give you some really good coping mechanisms. So we're going to go to break and you'll come back in a minute.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
This is a pre-recorded broadcast of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. My name is Dr. Patricia Bay. A lot of people call me Dr. Patty. You can go to my website, patriciabay.com, and you can click on articles I've written. You can order my book, Therapy in a Nutshell. You can order it either in hard copy or in the audio version with me reading it. So if you've been listening to my podcasts and you're getting very anchored to my voice, it'll be like me reading to you. A lot of people say that. It's kind of fun. Anyway, Therapy in a Nutshell. And my website is patriciabay.com. All right, we're talking about guilt, shame, and blame, a powerful triad of emotions that can alter our lives. So I want to share with you some of the things I see in my practice about guilt, shame, and blame for people. And it's a very life-altering thing for them when they're experiencing this. Many people I've known and seen in my practice have something akin to test-taking anxiety. It could be fear of public speaking or fear of performing in some way. But test-taking anxiety is really interesting because it takes on a life of its own. People going for their nursing boards or their therapist boards or their medical boards are passing the bar for being an attorney. Those are powerful life transitions, and there's a lot attached to passing those exams to be licensed. When you fail those exams, and many, many people do, the pass rate for all of these really difficult professions, the fail rate is high. And so there's no guarantee that you're just going to walk in there and ace it and buzz out of the room going, ah, that was great. They're hard, and they're tedious, and they're very long. So when you fail them, what happens is it can set up a downward spiral of performance anxiety. What if I fail it again? What if I'm embarrassed? Do I look stupid? Is something wrong with me? so-and-so didn't fail it the first time or the second time. They only had to take it two times or three times. What if I have to take it more than that? So test-taking anxiety is not just about anxiety for the future. It's about shame, and it's about guilt, and it's about blame. Many people who are fearful of passing their boards for whatever profession feel very guilty that they didn't study correctly, or they're not smart enough, or they weren't motivated enough to do it right. They feel a lot of shame. And the thing I hear most in my office is, I just look stupid. I'm so embarrassed. And are people going to think I'm not going to be a good fill-in-the-blank, a good nurse, a good attorney, a good therapist, if it takes me time to pass my tests? So the shame and the blame becomes a coat that they wear. They put it on like a coat. And then when they go to take the test again, they already feel unsuccessful. And that's not the way to go into test taking. So it isn't just about anxiety. It's about shame and blame. And to really step into that and look at that can be powerful. Another thing I see in my office a lot is people who have a lot of guilt and a lot of blame and shame for how they did past relationships. Sometimes I hear people say, that was the best relationship I've ever had. That person was my soulmate. I love that person. And I really screwed up. I hurt them. I betrayed them. I ruined the relationship. And I hold a whole lot of anger at myself and blame for myself for really ruining that relationship. So they're not only grief-stricken for the loss of what they deem to be a really good relationship, but the shame and the guilt and the self-blame for the mistakes that they made that maybe created the demise of that relationship is very powerful on people and on a person who feels that way. And I know many of you listening will stop and say some of your biggest do-overs are you wish you hadn't ruined your marriage, or you wish you had had the perseverance to stick out a relationship that was rocky at the moment, or you had gone in and gotten help like the person asked you to, but your pride was too much in your way and you wouldn't go get help. So the shame and the blame and the guilt for having ruined something that you now look back on and see as so valuable is a powerful emotion and speaks to the idea that when we look back at our do-over list, sometimes what we come down to is we have to say, I made those choices, I made those mistakes, I did those things in another time, whether it was a week ago or a year ago or 10 years ago. I hopefully have learned from the mistakes that I made, and I need to forgive myself. I need to recognize those lessons were for a reason. We're going to do a whole show at some point on forgiveness because it's a very powerful topic, and it isn't just as simple as, oh, forgive yourself. It's more about recognizing that those lessons were important and they served you. Another shame and blame and guilt thing that I hear a lot in my office is the mistakes we have made with our children. I've always joked around and I said, I wonder what my two kids are going to be in therapy about because the mistakes that their dad and I made with them. Because we all raise children by the seat of our pants. Their high schools and schools do not do enough of child rearing 101 or parenting 101 or relationships 101 or communication 101 or sexuality 101. We don't do enough of that teaching people how to be successful. So we parent by the seat of our pants and we all make mistakes. Every single one of us. Doesn't matter how much training you have, you are sometimes too tired, too hungry, overwrought, frustrated, dealing with life, and you will say and do things that you later regret. But I do see people in my office that have extreme regret for abuse that they did, or being an extreme addict or alcoholic while they were raising their children. And knowing now, and having maybe some of them even made amends for the harm that they caused raising their children. So if you carry that kind of guilt, where you say, I wish I had been a better mom or a better dad, that's where doing some of the steps of 12 steps, even if you're not an addict, really doing an intense personal moral inventory. How did I harm others? How did I harm my children? How did I harm myself? And just do that step, really list it. Then you can begin to figure out if you should be making amends. I'll share with you a story that was extremely powerful for me. My mom had gone through a really difficult menopause. So from the time I was 16 till I was about 18, she was kind of off the rails a little bit. And she knew that. She knew that it was hormones and she was, you know, kind of all over the place. But I remember when I was about 30 or 35, my mom and I were sitting on the couch and I said to her, we were talking about my childhood and I said a couple of things. And my mom looked at me and she said, "There are so many things that I would do differently if I had it to do over. And I've learned so much through my life that I wish I could parent you again." And she didn't have to give the whole list of every mistake she had made, or even mistakes I had made, because I was, you know, a normal kid. But I felt like 1,000 pounds was lifted off my shoulders. And I didn't need a litany of mistakes or confessions or ways that she could have been different. The fact that she said, "There are so many things I would do differently if I knew then what I know now," they were incredibly powerful and healing words. And I also liked it that she didn't start to blame herself and look for me for forgiveness and retribution and anything else. She didn't start picking up a hammer and beating on herself and saying what a horrible person she was, because my mom was a really great mom. She went through some really hard years there. But if she had gone into the shame and the blame and the, you know, wanting me to make her feel better, that wouldn't have felt good either. The very simple statement, "I wish I could do a lot of things differently. And if I knew then what I know now, I would. I would do things differently." Those are powerful, powerful words. So remember, if you start to take responsibility for things that you've done with your kids, you don't necessarily have to list everything. You might list some categories, like, "I wish I didn't drink as much when you were little," or, "If I had known what sobriety would be like, I would have gotten it sooner." Or, you know, you can say some categories, but you don't necessarily have to list everything. Another place that I've heard a lot of guilt and shame about is caregiving. When you have a terminally ill spouse or child or family member, might be your parent, might be a sibling, and you're doing your best to caregive, nobody in the world understands how hard your job is except for you. There might be people that you've heard me in the past talk about. There are people that run to, and there are people that run away. So even if you have people in your life that run to you and help you, they will get glimpses of what your life is like. But nobody is with the person you're caregiving 24/7 like you are. So what happens is we as caregivers, I was the primary caregiver for my husband who had a terminal brain disease, and he died 3 years ago. And there are times that you just wish you could be more patient or do better or show up more or not get frustrated. And caregivers everywhere carry a whole lot of guilt and shame for not being perfect. And that is wasted emotion. You're doing the best you can. And you have to be gentle with yourselves. So that's just an important thing. The other place that I see guilt and shame happen is in performance. And let's be specific here. I see it in sexual performance a lot. When people have a problem performing to what they believe is the optimal level of their sexuality, it takes on a life of its own. For example, erectile dysfunction. When men have trouble getting an erection, the next time they go to have sex with their partner, their performance anxiety is huge, and they feel a lot of guilt and a lot of shame. And you have to remember, many men are raised with a lot of men shaming. And so when men don't perform to what they believe is the optimal level for them, they will do a lot of internal shaming. That takes on a life of its own and creates sexual dysfunction. It happens for women too, as well. So those are just some of the areas that I see all the time in my practice of people shaming and blaming themselves and feeling guilty for not being perfect. So we're going to go to break. And when we come back, I want to give you some coping skills of how you might be able to shift this shame blame game that we do and maybe create a little bit of lightness and pave the way for some happiness in your life. So we're going to go to break. We'll be back in a minute.
Redding Electric Utility cares about the whole community, and we offer an income-qualified residential energy discount program that can save you up to $400 a year on your energy bill. And once per year, CARES bill credit up to $300. To find out if your income qualifies you for a residential discount program and CARES program, call 339-7200. That number again is 339-7200.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? Every week, there's a new chapter. To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program, Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on KCNR 1460 AM with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Hi, this is Linda Bott, and let me tell you about our North State Now show on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. right here on KCNR. The first Thursday of the month will be yours truly, covering arts and entertainment and all kinds of fun stuff. The second Thursday will be Michelle Slade, highlighting and interviewing North State heroes. The third Thursday is James Masada and Rhonda Alvey, bringing you all things with Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. And the fourth Thursday from Shasta Regional Medical Center is Dr. Orna Gill covering all things women's health. North State Now is brought to you by Black Bear Diner, Shasta Regional Medical Center, and Carlene's Restaurant and Bar located at 1100 Center Street. That's North State Now every Thursday night at 6 p.m. right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio.
This is a pre-recorded broadcast of Therapy in a Nutshell.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patricia Bay. And as we came back from break, you are listening to the incredibly beautiful CD called Smoky Mountain Dreams, Randy McGinnis's Native American Flute CD with classical cellist Stacy Nichols of the Knoxville Symphony. It is an absolutely stunningly beautiful CD. My mom, who died not long ago, listened to that CD almost every night and would only get halfway through it before she'd fall asleep. So it's peaceful and relaxing, and Stacy and Randy's music together is stunningly beautiful. So you can find that on randymcginnis.com or on Spotify or YouTube. It's called Smoky Mountain Dreams by Randy McGinnis. So we're talking about shame and guilt and blame, that three-legged stool that holds each other up, because if you're not shaming, you're blaming and having guilt. I've been talking to you about some of the things that people do with shame and blame and guilt, but I want to share with you a path out of that. One, the first path is awareness. In a prior podcast that I did, I talked to you about how to create change. And so you have to suffer, you have to have awareness of your suffering. Then you make decisions, then you take action, and then you create change. And that is in a prior podcast explained extensively. But let's look at the idea that when we rely on shame and guilt to try and motivate our future behavior to be different, it's really unproductive. It brings us into a downward spiral of fear. And the answer to not doing shame and guilt is to do vulnerability, to do empathy, to do sympathy. There's a difference between empathy and sympathy. Sympathy is where, oh, I see you're going through a hard time. I'm having compassion for you. Empathy is where you have experienced that hard time. Like, let's take the example of cancer. I have not had cancer, but I can have sympathy for people that have. I can have compassion for people going through treatments and the fear of what, you know, of dying and all of that. Empathy would be when you have experienced cancer and you can relate on that level. It's often very healing to talk with someone who's empathetic on what you're going through. But sympathy and compassion and understanding and seeking to understand somebody's journey can be healing as well. But in order for us to allow empathy or sympathy in, we have to be vulnerable. When we are vulnerable, we stop projecting that we should be perfect. We start to own it, that we are traveling a road that is imperfect, that is fraught with obstacles and things to overcome. So embracing the idea of being vulnerable, allowing yourself to be imperfect, owning mistakes that you have made is a huge path to doing it differently. The most powerful thing that I see is when someone starts to get clean and sober, and all of a sudden, instead of them feeling like a total screw-up or horrid person, they're standing in their truth, talking about their horrid journey into addiction. They're owning their behavior. They're making amends to people. And instead of them standing there with their tail tucked between their legs, feeling like a screw-up, they're standing there with their head held high, owning their story. And it isn't like anything hugely changed. They still have all the people they harmed in their life. They are stepping into it from a different direction. Instead of being overcome and overrun by shame and guilt, they are standing in their truth. And their truth in that moment was, I led a difficult and harmful life to myself and to others, and I am owning that, and I'm doing my best to change my behavior, and I'm making amends to people that I've hurt. They've got smiles on their faces. Their eyes are bright. They are telling their story to anyone that will listen because they're realizing they're healing. And that is powerful. So what they've done is they've stepped into their vulnerability as human beings. They have started to own their story in a way that is not diminishing themselves, but is augmenting themselves. They're lifting themselves up. So that's a super good example of how you can let go of shame and guilt and begin to step into your vulnerability and the power of your life and the power of changing. I want to teach you how to do a forgiveness exercise. When I teach this to people, I teach them that forgiveness, this act of forgiveness, is really important. And there's a way to do it. The first thing that you do, and we're going to talk about forgiving yourself. That's what this is about. Shame and guilt is often about forgiving ourselves. Blame is about forgiving other people that we feel have harmed us or have purposely done wrong. But blame often makes us feel shameful and guilty ourselves because we feel we should have known or we should have done it differently or we should have stopped it. We should all over ourselves. So in this forgiveness exercise, the first thing that you do is you make a list. So you're going to list all the things that you need to forgive yourself for. Not need, not want to, willing to, or able to, but need to for your own peace of mind. If you do this right, you'll probably have 10 binder sheets of a list. You can do categories. You can say, I need to forgive myself for my addiction or my unhealthy behavior, and then list all the things you can think about that you need to forgive yourself. Be sure and put down all those hugely embarrassing moments that you don't like to think about, the ones that you carry shame about, the ones that are on your do-over list. Like if you were dancing naked on a coffee table in front of, you know, all your frat people and you're super ashamed about that, put it on your list. So you're going to make a list, all the things I need to forgive myself for. Carry the list around with you in your purse or in the glove compartment of your car and take it with you in and out of the house and take it into work and put it in your drawer because you will think of things at the oddest moments. You'll think of them at stoplights and, you know, in the middle of a meeting, jot it down and make the list as comprehensive as you can. Then once you've made your forgiveness list, the next thing you're going to do is write a letter. And I call this a barf letter. You're going to vomit onto a page everything you're thinking about that's on that list. You're going to write it to yourself, dear me. You're going to write it to a person you might be blaming if you do this again later after you've done yourself. And excuse me. And when you write the letter, you don't worry about punctuation or grammar. And I'm a grammar nerd, so I can give you permission to do that. You let go of the need to make it perfect. You just start vomiting onto the page. Now, you are not going to give this letter to anybody. You're not going to show it to the person you wrote it about. You're not going to put it on Facebook, all right? You're going to not share it with anybody. This is a vomit letter to get out all the emotions. When you are looking at your list and writing the letter, don't be surprised if you have some raw emotion come forth. If you're sobbing or you're picturing things or you're on the floor rocking, that's okay. The reason for the letter is to let out the emotions. Then once you've done your letter and once you've done your list, you're going to do what's called a 7x70. 7x70 is powerful, and it is based on three things in my mind. It is based biblically in that Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, how many times should we forgive?" And they were standing at the well, and Jesus said to Peter, "We forgive 7 times. We forgive 7x70 times. The lesson being that Jesus was trying to tell Peter that you forgive until you are cleansed. You forgive until you're done. So the 7x70 is based biblically, and you can put that in any spiritual framework you want, because it's also based therapeutically. Anytime you focus hard enough on a situation and you're focusing on it for recovery and for change, you're going to create change in that you're focusing on. And it's also based in numerology. 7 is a healing number. So 7x70 becomes a powerfully healing number. So put it in whatever framework you want. But I can tell you, over 30 years of assigning this homework to people, it has created some powerful change. What you do with a 7x70 is for 7 days straight, 70 times you write, "I forgive myself." Now later when you do this for somebody else, you might, "I forgive my mother," or "I forgive whoever." But right now, you're going to write, "I forgive myself." And no, you can't copy and paste it. Those of you who are laughing, computer nerds out there. You're going to handwrite, "I forgive myself, I forgive myself," 70 times. And you're going to do that for 7 days straight. And you're going to notice what comes up and how you feel. This is a powerfully forgiving exercise. But more importantly, the exercise is going to help pinpoint where you have carried shame and guilt and how it has harmed your life. And you're beginning to allow yourself to move forward in a direction without carrying that with you forever. It's hugely important. So let's just review for a few minutes here. Shame and guilt, and their close cousin blame, run our lives. They keep us focused on the past, regretting things we've done, regretting consequences, feeling shame and guilt over our motives of why we did certain things. It creates grief and loss for things that our behavior may have lost us or changed. And it makes us carry a powerful burden. Shame and guilt are like walking around with 2 100-pound suitcases, one in each hand, and you're supposed to be able to be happy and not in pain when you're doing this. So I'm talking about opening up those suitcases, looking inside, and learning not to carry them around anymore. Now, here's the other thing. If I have really pushed your buttons and you're really having a struggle, it's time to get into some therapy. Take your forgiveness list, take the shame and the guilt that you struggle with, and go and get some help, because you can free your life. So I want to thank you for joining me today, talking about guilt and shame and blame. Listen to the prior podcast that I've got on that will take you into some other lessons that'll totally go with these. It'll be great. So you have been listening to Therapy in a Nutshell. I am Dr. Patricia Bay. You can go to my website, patriciabay.com. You can go to my podcast, which is on Anchor app, which is free and safe, or you can go to iTunes, Spotify, and other places that they have podcasts. It's in many places. So thank you for joining me on Therapy in a Nutshell, and let's heal the world 1 hour at a time.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.